Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
All right, Rich Casanova here, your host. Joining us in the studio, our co-host, Ryan McPherson. And most exciting part of the day or the week, maybe. This is a great show. We have a great lineup this morning.
Right? Here we are, Tuesday, 10 a.m. once again, and a great roundtable of industry experts here to share their stories.
Yeah, you know, it took me a while. I didn't connect the X or Radio X for quite a while. I thought it was just a cool letter or whatever, power letter. But yeah, that's for experts. So we're interviewing experts respective to their own field and industries. And it's going to be, what a great day as well, right? I mean, we have this amazing million-dollar view. Yep. I don't know why I always talk about this on the radio. Like, anyone can see it. Right, yeah. But you'll see it on the photos on the site and all that good stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there listening. And look forward to some really good conversation.
Looks like there's two of us wearing green in the studio. The rest of us are just waiting to be pinched or whatever.
Something like that.
Well, I'm only a quarter Irish, so I don't know how that works. How do you have any Irish in
your quarter? Your feet?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly, yeah. My sense of humor, so I blame it on the Irish. So let's not get. So, are you any Irish in your family?
Yes, I'm half Irish, half Scotch. I'm Scotch Irish, right? So we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day in full force this evening.
Grandmother from Madrid. I don't know why we're getting into all this international. Actually, we are working on the World Trade Center radio. I didn't tell you about that. That's in the works, and so we'll have a lot of these conversations.
Pretty excited about that.
Yeah. Okay. So meanwhile, let's bring us back to America and to Buckhead. Mm-hmm. And so Ryan, who do we have in the studio joining us this morning?
Well, first we have Mr. Brian Smith. He is a commercial risk specialist. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
And what are you going to be talking to us today about?
The topic that I've selected today is going to be about center of influence networking and one of the effective ways that, as a professional in sales, we can actually broaden our network to enhance the opportunity to work with different types of clients and customers and identify those as such.
And I think I read that on LinkedIn. You posted a blog or an article about that, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Nice feedback from it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Well, I was very intrigued, so I wanted to have you on the show for that.
All right. So hang on, listeners, for more to come on that. And next to him is Onyx Burrell. Good morning, Onyx.
Good morning.
Good morning. What are you going to be sharing with our listeners today?
Today, I'm going to be talking more about creativity and inspiration and letting that lead and influence your business.
Oh, man. We got two influencers topics here.
Yeah.
All right. So who do we have up?
All right. And next is Nicole Hauser. She's owner of Nikki's Delightful Treats.
Oh, man. That sounds good.
Yeah. And no samples.
Guess what? She didn't bring or whatever. Yeah. We're stuck with our healthy bars going on in the studio here. Yeah.
That's okay. And so you'll be sharing more about that today with our listeners about Nikki's Delightful Treats and how it got started and what you do.
Yes, I will.
All right. We're looking forward to that.
Well, I guess if she gave out samples everywhere she went, you wouldn't have any left to sell, right?
No, I wouldn't.
All right, we'll let you off the hook then. Yeah.
And first up on our interview list is Kim O'Connor. She is a VP of New Product Innovation with Elevon, and she is Vice President of New Product Innovation, responsible for payments security at Elevon, a payment processor and wholly owned subsidiary of U.S. Bank. Over 20 years of experience in the payments industry with 6 years focused on payments security products. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
20 years. What did you start when you were 2 years old or something? About 20 years. Wow. I would have never guessed that. Yeah, I'd give you, you know. All right. So meanwhile, I think from a civilian standpoint, the first thing we think of when we hear, credit card and processing is this issue of the big box guys and how they get into challenges they have and these, retailers and breach issues. So, I mean, when that obviously that comes up in your business, what would you have to say about that?
So, first of all, there's many things that businesses can do to make sure that payments are securely processed. However, that being said, it's not always easy to do. There's a basic set of guidelines that the payment card industry sets out. It's called PCI DSS. It stands for Payment Card Industry Data Security Standards.
Oh, yeah. We all knew that. Yeah.
Right. Common
knowledge. And any business that processes credit cards is required to follow those standards. So that's a basic premise that or set of standards that every business should be following. But then there's things over and above that that they can do to help secure their payment transactions. And so it depends on what type of business they have, whether they're accepting cards in person, over the internet, maybe through mail or maybe through telephone order to help keep those transactions secure.
And obviously the media, we've heard about this, especially it seems around the holidays or ramping up to the holidays. I don't know if there's coincidence or timing, but the big Home Depot and Target and all these big brands. But is that just do they just, you know, look to hack those large accounts and those large businesses, those big box guys, or some of the small businesses? Do they come into play? Or
So the small businesses absolutely come into play. So I think that there's a big misconception out there that it's the big retailers that are getting breached, and those are the ones that make the headlines.
Right, right.
So because they make the headlines, everybody thinks that, well, those are where the breaches occur, and as a small or medium-sized business, you don't have to be concerned with it. However, their statistics show that over 90% of data breaches actually occur in small businesses. So when you think about it, it makes sense, because those big box retailers have a lot of resources to place against making sure their systems are secure. They've got IT experts. They have security experts. Your average business owner isn't an expert in security. And so as a consequence, they don't have all of the basic tools or skills necessary to secure their business or to even recognize in many cases that they're even at risk.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about the small versus the big guys, but are there certain industries that are kind of just more likely targets or higher profile to be hacked, if you will? Or
so any business is at risk, but where we see a lot of the breaches happening is in retail, food and beverage, and also hospitality. Mm-hmm. But again, any business is at risk. It doesn't really, they've all been untouched. So.
Well, I guess from the hacker standpoint, those are just more visible, right? So they may not know about the billion-dollar company in Wichita that's producing, you know, nuts and bolts or whatever, right?
Correct. But what we found that's very interesting is that there are certain things that a business owner can do to protect their networks.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Well, for example, just making sure they're not using default passwords on their firewall. Well, some of them don't realize that. And there's actually hackers that sit in other parts of the world that do nothing but sit around and look for unsecured networks to access. And then once they do that, they're in the system.
Yeah. And that's the Holy Grail, game over, right?
Right. Exactly.
So what about from, because we interview all types of folks from, you know, startup companies. You did a remote broadcast at Startup Riot, right?
Yes, yep.
Here in Atlanta.
That's right.
But you also did an event at World Congress Center for
training pros. Yep.
So we kind of cover that whole spectrum. So, but we think, again, like you said, these big guys, they have, you know, teams or resources behind them, right? So is this something that could potentially, for a smaller business or a medium size, could it, what kind of devastation could they experience? Could it put them out of business, or do they always have the backup resources from the financial institutions to cover that, I guess, or
so,
in the case of a breach?
Yeah, absolutely. A small business could be put out of business by experiencing a data breach. And the way that that happens is it really, an average card data breach cost about $200 per record. So
wow.
If you just start doing the math on that, even if it cost $100,000, if you're a real small business, that could put you out of business. If it cost, you know, $1 million, what small business could survive that?
Yeah.
So it really depends on how many records are breached and how big it is. But as soon as there's a data breach, there has to be a forensic analysis that takes place. Those are $25,000 or $30,000. There could be fines from the card brands like Visa and MasterCard.
Wow.
There could be lawsuits. And then there's just the reputational and brand risk that comes along with that as well. So definitely a lot of cost to consider.
Yeah, the ripple effect of that, just when you rattle off a few of those, some of those didn't really come to the forefront as an obvious. I think about from the consumer standpoint, it was like, you know, most businesses can't afford to lose any customers, much less a majority or some of their best customers. And once you lose them, I mean, what is it? It's it takes seven times more of an investment to acquire a new customer as it does to keep your current customer. So
exactly.
Yeah. All right. So that's the one side of it. So what are some strategies or tactics and how do you guys come into play? We didn't really, maybe let's back up for a second and tell us a little bit more about what y'all do overall. Obviously, global payment solutions, but is there something that y'all offer that, you know, we may not think comes in your wheelhouse? Or
so I think that, you know, as a payment processor, we process all types of payment cards, credit cards, debit cards, ACH, checks, gift cards, loyalty programs.
Really?
So we have all of that. And we have mobile solutions. So if a business wants to accept cards on their mobile phone, they can do that. We have tablet solutions if they want to accept payments using a tablet as well. So wide variety of solutions. And not only that, it's from the smaller businesses all the way up to the multinational type of wow. businesses.
Yeah, when you talk about global payments, not just from here to Cartersville, but right?
Exactly, right.
Are you going to have the eye scanner device coming up where you can just blink at the register and then your transaction's done? Is that,
not yet.
Okay, we'll have you back on. But yeah, speaking of these mobile apps, I mean, everywhere I go, it seems like everybody's using their devices, and it's going to eliminate this wallet in our back pocket, right?
Well, I don't know if it will completely eliminate it, right? I think that several years ago, people were saying that checks would go away,
right.
and they still haven't gone away. They've predicted cash would go away, and it hasn't either. But however, it will, over time, comprise a larger and larger amount of the transactions.
You're right. People do get carried away in that stuff. It's kind of like they said that when the computers came out, it was going to replace paper. You know, printing, everything would be digital. I think we print more stuff now that we have the ability
right.
and the volume, whatever, right?
Yes.
And then retail and the internet is going to shut down every retail store. It was going to be out of business. Yeah. So.
And that hasn't happened
exactly,
yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
So it's kind of the same. But it is pretty fascinating. I think people are intrigued by this, all these digital platforms. So where do you guys come into mix in there in the, in those type of payment options?
So, yeah, we are supporting all those different payment options. There is a big move towards EMV. So EMV cards are the cards that have chips on them. And coming up in October, there's a liability shift. So whoever is not supporting EMV would be liable for the counterfeit fraud associated with those transactions. So we have a big push right now to get our customers upgraded to EMV terminals so they can accept those cards. Along with that comes contactless or NFC technology where you can tap your card or your phone to make a payment happen. So we're supporting all of those as well, including Apple Pay and some of the other well-known wallets.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I will always carry cash, and my mom still writes checks. So, you know, she holds the line up at the supermarket all the time. So, but that's okay. But my bank just issued me a credit card with the new chip embedded in it. Is that better than my old card?
It is better than your old card. And here's why. So your current card that just has a magnetic stripe on it is all static values. Whenever you're asked for those three digits on the back of the card or the four digits on front, they're always the same, making it very easy for a thief to counterfeit the card. And also if it's a skimmer is attached to a payment device, if they scan the card, they can capture the data. EMV cards in that chip, there's a little algorithm that constantly changes those numbers, and it's unique for each transaction. So it makes it very difficult for those cards to be counterfeited.
Wow.
But I have heard that there are criminals out there who have these apps on their smartphone that all they have to do is touch that phone to your chip on your card, and they can skim that information almost wirelessly, electronically. And what can we do to protect that? I mean, as soon as we come up with new technology to defeat the criminals, they're out there one step ahead of us.
Well, they're running a business too, whatever. You know, they got to make
criminal
enterprise.
They
got bills to pay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the case in some of the earlier technology. So there's several different nuances here, but there's NFC, which is near field communication, right. mm-hmm. and that's the type that was being used at first. And with that, there was only static values, so it was essentially taking what's on your magnetic stripe card and making it work on mm-hmm. on NFC. But with EMV contactless, it takes all those properties of the chip in an EMV card and just makes it wireless. So all the security technology that's built into the EMV card will be embedded in those new the new wireless technology mm-hmm. as well.
So if you're a business and you accept cards of any kind, you need to be protected. There's no way that you can successfully run a business without it.
There really isn't. When you look at all of the data breaches that have been happening, in fact, last year there's a new study out that shows that over 40% of businesses were breached last year.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean just payment card data. It can be other types of breaches. But when you look at that, you know, really you have to say, well, it's not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's a matter of when it's going to happen.
And they're not
going
to decrease whatever. Yeah,
definitely not. Right. In fact, fraud increased in the U.S., I think, in 2013 by 29%. So it's definitely a growing problem.
It's a growing business. Yeah, unfortunately. Yes. Yeah.
Well, why haven't more businesses adopted the new chip technology? It's cost too much, or what are some of the speed bumps they're experiencing?
Yeah. Well, there are some additional costs to it. But really, until it's required or there's some negative impact for not doing it, there's really not a lot of momentum for making a change. So once the card brands, Visa, MasterCard, Amex, American Express, and Discover, put out the new rules that say there will be a liability shift coming in October of 2015, that was the impetus needed to get not only the card issuers, the ones that issue your card that you said had a chip on it, that gets them to issue those cards because they don't want to be the weak link that is responsible for the fraud on that card. It also gets the businesses to adopt the technology because they don't want to be the weak link, because if they don't install those terminals to accept those EMV cards, then they will be responsible for the counterfeit fraud. Right. So really, it's a little bit of a stick in order to get the industry as a whole to start upgrading to EMV.
So it's not complicated to implement. It's just taking some time to implement.
Right. It's not that complicated. I think for a small business, it's not that complicated. It could be as simple as swapping out their countertop point of sale terminal. But when you're a large business, it's very complicated. Mm-hmm.
Across all those platforms and
a lot of different software platforms, a lot of different networks. It's extremely complicated.
Well, all their outlets, because they can't be operating under two different systems in different parts of the country. So, well, this is I've already felt like I'm more knowledgeable than I was just a few minutes ago. So, I see some people taking some notes. So we're going to hopefully allow some time for some continued conversation. But tell our listeners the best way to find out about your company, your services, and what y'all are doing.
Certainly. So we have a website, obviously. It's elavon.com, elavon.com. And it'll tell all about the company itself and what we do, what products and services we offer. Additionally, on that website, we have a security center. So if you click on that, there's all types of information about security solutions that can help secure the business, and talks a lot about what I just covered today.
Yeah, it sounds like a great resource for people to really delve
from
into.
From the small business to the large business to the consumer, everywhere across the board, you guys can provide help for them.
That's we good. Certainly can.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks for being on the show, Kim. It was a pleasure. And stick around. We may have some follow-up questions as well.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. So who do you have next?
All right. Next, we have Nicole Hauser. She is owner of Nikki's Delightful Treats. Nicole is a native of Atlanta, Georgia, who has been chosen as a winner of the American Small Business Championship hosted by SCORE. SCORE mentors to America's small businesses and Sam's Club. Nicole's passion for baking inspired her to open Nikki's Delightful Treats, where it allows for her creativity to follow. Nicole loves to make her customers happy by delivering unique desserts for their special events. Sounds good.
So did we already give you a hard time? No treats, but you're going to drop somebody later or what?
Yeah, I'm going to drop somebody later.
They're just being baked right now, right? Yeah.
Right, they're in the oven.
we did a spotlight episode on Georgia restaurants, Georgia food and beverage. We had the president of the Georgia Restaurant Association in here, and I'm telling you, it's one of the perks of the job of having these, especially we're thinking about doing lunchtime radio, just to make sure they'll bring lunch for us. But meanwhile, back to you, Nicole. It's all about you right now. So so the inspiration behind your company, tell us that backstory.
The inspiration behind my company is my grandmother. We used to always bake when I was young. My dad would send us down south. Like he stated earlier, I'm from Atlanta, so I would go down to South Georgia where she would bake all these delicious treats. And there was nothing really else to do down in the country but learn. So being in the kitchen with her inspired me to, you know, instill my baking further.
Okay. So for those tuning in, what's on your short list for types of bakery items you sell, or what's some of your hottest items, I guess?
My hottest items are the custom cakes. People have really gotten into like the 3D cakes. They're gotten away from like the regular sheet cake to where they want maybe like a purse cake, like a designer purse cake, or a car, or a designer shirt,
or radio microphone, whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
So 3D, so it has those different levels going on. So
yes,
it's like a, yeah.
You can really see it. So it really looks like the item.
Do you do that on a digital printer or how does that work? Or yeah.
No, mainly.
They have those devices, right? Where you can create anything, a car part or whatever. And, so
that would be easy. If
yeah,
I
yeah.
Could.
You might want to incorporate that. Yeah, just that's a little tip. So, what was the main attraction, Nikki's Delight, at these custom cakes? I mean, who are some of your customers or you know, that do business that order from you? I guess.
Well, my customer base is just anybody, to be honest. So if you call me up or go on my website, nikkisdelightfultreats.com.
All right. Get a little plug in there.
They just call me and place an order. So anybody around the metro Atlanta area can order from me.
And then do you deliver, have a storefront? Do they, can you ship or what's the method of distribution?
Mainly it is delivery.
Okay.
I don't have a storefront. I am licensed with the Department of Agriculture to bake outside of my home.
So outside your home. So you can't bake inside your home?
Inside
you
my home.
Outside your, I'm sorry. I know what you're saying. I'm just giving you a hard time. Too much caffeine. I apologize. Yeah.
See, that's why I didn't bring the cupcakes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, then we'd have all sugar and we'd be up on the wall. Yeah. So now what was the biggest challenge you had? And tell us a little bit about the score experience. And Onyx was also involved in that as well. Mm-hmm. So tell us how did you find out about SCORE? What's SCORE's mission, or what is it? Do you know what it stands for? Isn't it? I thought it was it's a mentoring program, right?
Yes, it is a mentoring program where you can get a mentor and they educate you on different aspects of business.
Okay.
I pretty much got into the competition by a friend that is a business owner in DC. So pretty much what you had to do is you had to sign up, you had to fill out different questions, and you had to have people to vote for you.
Uh-huh.
So,
so it's like called all your folks in South Georgia. Yeah.
I called on everybody, yeah. Facebook, Instagram, nice. You know, I just reached out, you know, yeah. My past customers, hey, come on, support me.
Yep.
So they picked the top two people out of each state.
And so what was your biggest challenge in launching?
My biggest challenge was the different permits and license and everything, because when I started, that's when they just started switching over to allowing you to bake inside your
home. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
At first, you had to have a commercial kitchen and everything else. So that was the biggest struggle, trying to find out the correct things that I needed to do to start my business and to also save me money from paying for, you know, additional kitchen space.
How long has Nikki's Delightful Treats been in business now?
We're going on our third year.
Third year.
Yes.
So you've served a lot of customers out there, some delicious treats. What have been some of your most memorable events or cakes or cookies you've put together?
Well, I have a lot of different memorable ones. I like doing like the designer purses and the shirts and everything like that. And we don't only just bake outside the home. We also sign up for different festivals around the city. So I have done a lot of the 1K walks and stuff like that to where I can get out and meet the community and serve treats that way as well. So that's some of my fun
memories. Have you done weddings or birthday parties, corporate events, all those kind of things?
I've done weddings and birthday parties.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting on the corporate people, so call me.
Okay, yeah. So if you want some delightful treats at your next corporate event, make sure you go to nikkisdelightfultreats.com or reach out to her there. So you're located in town here, but you service what part of the metro area do you service?
Well, I serve like all the way up to Gwinnett, down to McDonough and Noonan, just a circle.
Okay.
I was going to say the 285 circle,
sounds
but a little
good.
Bit further on the outskirts.
All right.
You could be the next king of pops. Did you see that the other night? It was on TV. They were talking about the guy that founded it. It was a college kid or whatever, right? And his brothers had gone down to I forget what it was. It wasn't Puerto Rico. I forget where they were at. But they found these the local folks made all these frozen. They didn't call them popsicles, but all out of fresh, fruits and everything else. He came back and started that 5 years ago. This is his fifth year now, and they're now they have this massive kitchen. They actually bought like 63 acres of property just to grow their own fresh fruits on and everything else. And they're doing over 1 million popsicles, like a month or something like that. It's just crazy. So that's get ready for that. Yeah.
Okay. I'll be ready for it.
Good. So anybody out there who's about to start their own baking venture, do you have any tips for them?
Yes, to make sure that your product is very tasty.
Number one, tasty products.
Tasty, and to also find out what your audience is going to be, because some people may like certain things over other people.
Right.
So whether it's like, you know, you're going to stick with cupcakes or stick with brownies or anything like that, just make sure that you know what you want
to
do.
What if people have certain dietary concerns? Are you able to accommodate them?
Yes.
So you can't gluten-free or lactose-free, all that taste-free.
Yeah, exactly, the sugar-free.
Yeah, probably get that a lot. So,
yes.
Any inside tips you have on baking itself? How does that work for you in the kitchen?
Well, baking it itself, I guess you have to taste your product. So
right.
That's how you get your inside tips. But also, it's trial and error, especially mm-hmm. you're coming up with different ingredients or you want to try something different. It's just trial and error. Have a lot of friends that are willing to taste your products and right. give you their true feedback.
Yeah. Be your personal focus group, whatever. Yeah. Right. So how do our listeners get in touch with you and find out about your tasty treats?
You can reach me at 404-992-0587, or you can contact me on the website at nikkisdelightfultreats.com.
What was a delightful experience having you here in the studio.
Right. Also, see you're on Twitter at Nikki's Delight FU.
Yes.
Okay. So make sure you hit her up on Twitter there or Instagram, Nikki's Delightful Treats, as well as on Facebook. So thank you once again for being
here. Okay. Who's up next?
All right. Next is Onyx Burrell. She's a 25-year-old mother, wife, and entrepreneur, and co-founder of Amentas Key LLC. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Hey. Very good. tell us about Amentas Key LLC and what are you doing over there?
Well, Amentas Key LLC is a gourmet soap. It's 100% natural bath and body products. So scrubs, butters.
Gourmet bath and product. Is that for women only or is there some men's products in there?
Actually, we just introduced a couple things for men. We have our Hero Bar. Okay. Which is army inspired, very rugged for the rugged gentleman.
Army inspired, yeah.
Yep. I smell sandalwood. Is that in there?
No. That one has.
That's actually your shoes. You took off your shoes a little bit earlier. Yeah.
Okay, so gourmet bath and body for the men and the women.
And
right?
the babies.
And the babies.
And the babies.
As well. And it's all natural ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Where did your inspiration come for creating these products?
Well, a couple different places. Perfect that Nikki went first. A lot of our soaps are modeled after treats. A lot of our products have otherwise edible ingredients. So a lot of the inspiration comes from confections. So we have that. And then also customer feedback. Customer feedback is primarily where the inspiration comes from. So every time a customer gets in front of our soap, like our cupcakes, they're very wowed by it and they can't believe that it's soap. So every time that happens, I feel like I need to one-up it and try something different and start building more. So I'm working on a full-on three-tier cake, but it's actually soap.
Right. So, and I'm just looking at some of the ingredients here on your product for the Hero Bar.
Yeah.
Olive oil, coconut oil, castor oil, shea butter, coconut milk, and so on. These are all natural ingredients.
Yeah.
How did you come to learn how to make these products?
Lots of research. Actually, my husband, who's also the other co-founder in the equation, he wanted to make soap. I didn't want to make soap.
No.
I wanted to stick to the safe, you know, scrubs and butters and all of that. But we've kind of switched roles. Like, I'm finding I'm the one in the kitchen making the soap.
Nice.
And now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, what is he doing? He's hanging out.
Right. And so behind the name Amentas Key, wait, tell us about that.
Well, the Amenta is another word for the subconscious in Egyptian mythology.
Okay.
So a lot of our products, it's not just about the physical experience of cleansing. It's also about relaxing and getting into a certain mind state to be able to go forward with your day.
Well, I like that. And how long have you been in business?
Officially? Yeah. Officially, 4 months.
Okay. Well, brand new to the market.
Yep, brand new.
Yeah.
We launched in October. We've already sold a couple hundred bars.
Nice.
We've been busy.
And what is your long-term goals for the business itself?
We have quite a few.
Okay.
What can I share with you guys? Long-term, we want our brand to be as American is apple pie. Oh, so wow. We want our brand in every house. We want you to kind of take over. Instead of referring to your soap as soap, we want that to be Amentis key.
Okay.
Like, I'm using my Amentis key today.
Nice, yeah. So tell us about the score experience, because that's how we, I think it was a PR firm that contacted us about the score winners.
Yeah.
So tell us about that experience.
It was actually a great experience. I haven't experienced anything like that. I took the risk. I saw, like Nikki, someone else had posted the championship entry form. It was someone in, I believe, California. And so I saw that and I signed up for it and I filled out their form. It's actually not just Score, it's Sam's Club as well. Sam's
okay.
Club is sponsoring it as well. And so I just asked everyone to vote. And because they were so intrigued with our products, they went for it and they helped us win. So
I see Shark Tank in your horizon real soon, would it, right?
Yeah.
Get on Shark Tank and then you go into every Sam's Club and every Whole Foods across the country.
Yeah.
But now these soap bars with all the confections and all these natural ingredients. I mean, we should have had those around when we were kids or whatever. I don't know about you, but then when my mom washed my mouth out with soap, I would have been like, okay, bring it on. Yeah.
Right? Well, it
tastes good.
It's still
mom
soap.
Didn't want to hear that though. Tastes good. Yeah.
It's still soap.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, still tastes just so like
not,
soap.
Right. So you're not going to serve that with coffee or anything. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So talk to us about your families. You're a young mother, wife, and entrepreneur. So what would you kind of share with someone listening that might be in your shoes right now thinking about sitting on the fence of getting involved in as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, certainly. I actually have a group on Facebook called Black Mompreneurs. So
okay.
They're in the exact same boat as me, most of them, with multiple children trying to balance life between entrepreneurship and also running their households. So I guess what I would say to them is to, once you take your hobby, because this was a hobby, once you take your hobby to market, you should make sure that everyone in your house is kind of on board with it. Everyone has a task and everyone feels involved. And then find a new hobby, because this is going to take over your life.
Right, right.
I mean, once it becomes a business, it's kind of takes over the house and has its own, you know, weight to it.
Right.
So you should have crafts and things ready to do otherwise, so that you can.
I've never heard it kind of put that way. That's an interesting take, because a lot of successful startups, it starts out as just like the guy with King of Pops, whatever, right? He was just had one little stand.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he did. And it just blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes this just like behemoth monster business that's mm-hmm. just can consume your life, right?
Right.
And so I never heard of replace that hobby that became your livelihood with another hobby, because otherwise mm-hmm. you kind of can go, you know, batty or stir crazy. Yeah.
Right. And time is very valuable.
Right.
In the household for most, you know, families.
For moms. Yeah.
For
families,
moms
yeah.
especially.
Right.
So it's definitely important to set aside other time to bond with your family, something other than your business. Keep you sane.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, sane. That's not a bad approach. Yeah. So tell our listeners best way to find out about your products and services and how do they place orders, or what's the process there?
Oh, we're currently online, so you can go to www.amentaskey.com. That's AmentasKey.com. Or go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/AmentasKeyLLC.
Yeah, you probably get a lot of traffic there on Facebook. That's a very kind of natural, organic platform for people to connect and kind of talk about fun stuff like what you're doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see you're also on Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, all Amentis Key LLC.
Mm-hmm.
So folks can follow you on all those social media platforms.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on the show. Stick around. We may have some additional questions here for you.
Okay.
And thanks for the sample. We have our Army bar right here, a Hero Bar.
Hero Bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I was never in the Army. Well, I was never in the Army, so
that's right.
But speaking of military, we do have our next guest. Served, as he said earlier, he served his time, and you did as well, right?
That's
so,
right.
So who do we have up next?
Next, we have Brian Smith. He's commercial risk specialist. He's a commercial insurance specialist with Snelling's Walters Insurance of Atlanta. In his role, Brian serves business clients with risk management solutions focused on reducing hazards, enhancing profitability, and promoting a safe work environment. The basis of his business practice is client-centric, emphasizing truthful engagement, accountability, and measured results. In addition to his insurance career, he served 14 years as a U.S. Army Reserve officer as an evaluator. Brian is a certified insurance counselor and an associate in risk management. Thank you for your service, Brian.
Ah, thank you for recognizing that.
Absolutely. And you were an evaluator with the Army Reserve. What were you evaluating?
We were doing smoke and chemical operations with regards to decontamination of troops and equipment. Okay. And that was all under the reserve component. Mm-hmm. So I was a field evaluator for a unit down at Fort Gillem.
Right here on the south side of town.
That's right,
Fort Gillem. So, but now you are, like I said, a commercial insurance specialist with Snellings Walters Insurance of Atlanta. Tell us about your role over there and what you're doing on a daily basis.
Well, that's a great question there. Each day I go out and I'm talking with various companies about their commercial insurance needs, where their risks are, identifying what their problems may be so that we can assist in solving those. In fact, earlier Kim was talking about cyber liability, and that's one of the most profound or exciting areas of insurance at this point, if there can be such a thing, that is amazingly important to small businesses, not to mention businesses of all sizes because of the exposure. So during the course of a conversation, I try to identify where those needs may rest just through really thought-provoking conversations.
I see. And so then we were talking about Center of Influence Marketing and how that is relevant to your business development duties.
Yes. The Center of Influence Networking aspect of my role is just an element. There are several other areas that I work on as well, but I put a post out on LinkedIn with regard to this topic because I thought my colleagues, peers could appreciate what we were coming from and to try to clarify some of the misconceptions about Center of Influence Networking, so that they don't waste time and energy or effort on something that may actually not go anywhere unless they've got their direction placed appropriately.
Right, yeah. So what are the three main factors to consider when adding to your Center of Influence Network?
Well, you know, Ryan, I'll tell you this. 99% of the listeners are not going to be effective in a Center of Influence Network.
Why is that?
They don't want to put the time in.
So it takes time.
We've heard it before, network. It's work. Mm-hmm. It is. It's not easy. And a lot of times what will happen is that you'll join a networking group or you'll have a group of professionals that are also in sales. And there appears to be a gap. Either the reciprocation of leads don't come your way or they're not active. They don't work the system. They don't actually engage with one of the hardest things is just simply picking up the phone or sending an email. Center of Influence Networking, in order for it to be effective and work, you've got to identify the right players. So the article that I posted had a lot to do with how do you identify those key individuals. Mm-hmm. One of them would have to be their influence and how good about what they do. What's their value proposition? Why do they do what they do? I mean, do we really ask that? I mean, why are you on the radio?
Right,
why,
right.
What's your passion?
Right.
And when you can align those with your own value system, that's a relationship that is not superficial. Mm-hmm. It's one that's more relevant and it's built on trust. And the last thing is I want to know, how do you work? Are you picking up the phone? Who else are you associated with? One of my colleagues at the office had said to me, Brian, if it were up to me and we're going to a networking event, I don't really necessarily want to be with the people that are there. I want to be with the people that are too busy that can't be there. That's what he was saying.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the 99% comes from.
Okay.
I mean, do you really want to put it in? Sales is tough enough.
Yeah.
So when you've got an opportunity to meet somebody and you're not properly aligned with them, it could very well be a waste of time. And that's what the premise of the article
is about. The relationships and the building of them with the people who can influence you, not only professionally, but personally as well.
Absolutely.
You want to do business with those people. And mm-hmm. and so how do you find those people who are not at the networking event? I mean, how do you get in front of those hard to reach business professionals that you want to associate you with?
It's a process, not an event. What happens is that we'll go to an event that could be sponsored by a third party. There's a ton of people there. But the problem is that the majority of the folks that are there are looking at a simple way to get a lead.
Yeah. Here's my card. Here's your card. And let's do business.
Yeah. No, and why? Do you really?
To it.
Do you connect? Can you connect over a cocktail or, hey, let's get together later? No. So it's a vetting process that you may depend or rely on either customers that you're currently serving, people that you respect in the community, mm-hmm. Individuals that you may meet from a colleague. or just relationships that can develop over time if you want to invite them into your network.
No, that makes sense. All right, good.
So talk to us about an example. Is there like a specific story that comes to mind or that listeners could relate to? What's your, you know, the topic you were talking about, these centers of influence?
I'm fortunate enough to actually have a very strong, small circle of people that I depend on. And I say depend on them because they're able to articulate my story. They're able to articulate the value that we have when we're talking to people about a very important issue, which is insurance, their risk management plan.
Right.
So one of the examples that resonates with me is by an individual. Can I don't know if I can mention his name.
Yeah, go for it.
His name is Jeff Rines. And I've known Jeff Rines for over 7-8 years now. We worked together in a previous firm. And Jeff knows my value proposition. He trusts me. And he's willing to say to somebody, the guy's good. It's okay to say no, and I think you should take his call. And when he says that, it resonates with the listener. And he did exactly that on a recent opportunity. We visited with this company. They took our call, very welcoming. It was warm. Ended up being more of an employee benefits opportunity than a property and casualty. I'm a property and casualty broker. Okay. Nonetheless, because of that introduction, just one example of that, we streamlined the process significantly. And we were able to enhance someone's business because we actually put a better program in, and that the catalyst being Jeff Rines.
So that's that's a great example of how it works kind of in the real world. So what about other prospecting engagement opportunities that you would encourage or kind of give some pointers or tips on?
Well, Center of Influence Networking is obviously one of those arrows in the quiver of our sales techniques.
Right.
And what it gets down to is picking up the phone.
That's the thing that seems so ancient or whatever. It's like, send me a fax, whatever, right? I mean, I find myself doing that. I'm typing out an email and I'm like, and the person's just around the corner, just pick up the phone. Yeah. But why do you attribute we don't do that so often?
Fear.
Yeah.
I think that when it comes to professional sales, we hate rejection. By and large, a sales professional is an extrovert. If you continually tell somebody no or hear no,
right.
Well, you need to hone your skills. Center of Influence Networking, unfortunately, can be used as a crutch by some people that are not willing to put in the time to pick up the phone. Okay. So what you want to do is you want to ensure that when you do align yourself with that individual or a small group, I've actually put together a small group of professionals as well, that we're vetting constantly. We're trying to figure out whether or not the fit is there. So, in addition to doing the calling, you got to do some research occasionally. You got to look and see what's going on. I use LinkedIn quite a bit. I certainly look at various articles and companies that are coming up and some of the things that they're doing so I can identify with maybe their potential, if you will, risk needs.
So talk to us about some of the hurdles with networking and what you're kind of preaching or coaching here, whatever some challenges.
I think one of the biggest things that's a hurdle is it's a potential waste of time. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the right partner in this, you could be going to events or you can be conducting your time or using your time in a way that's not efficient. However, you want to make sure that what you're able to do is also a value. If you're not willing to pick up the phone or you're not willing to type out that email and make that introduction, it's not going to go anywhere either. So when it comes to an element of the article, which was simply called just reciprocation, I think by nature, as human beings, if someone does something for us, mm-hmm. we inherently want to give back. And when it comes to Center of Influence Networking, that's one of the nice aspects of it. There are some people, however, that are all about them.
Right, right.
Yeah. They're willing to take every opportunity or ask you for every lead you can offer, but they don't give it back. One of the elements as well was about how do you identify or how do you track? And I have a metric system and a fluid system. I'm a fluid guy. Metric is if Rich says to me, hey, I've given you 3 leads.
Right, right.
What have you given me? I haven't given you any. Mm-hmm. Well, you're physically taking it down in a metric. I happen to know in my mind, if he gives me 3 leads, I probably owe him something. But you don't want to have a partner that's just going to throw you a lead that's not even appropriate for what Rich is actually trying to do. So when you use the fluid approach, it's far more of a personal approach, if you will. But by keeping your network relatively small, it's manageable. And I try to avoid overlapping as well. I may have a cyber liability professional, a banker, a CPA firm, an attorney, but I don't want to have too many of those because I want to ensure that I'm giving as much as I'm getting from each of those without thinning out the crowd or not able to meet their expectations of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty critical as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you build kind of a mutual relationship referral basis. And sometimes, you know, as much as people want to contribute, maybe it's just not a fit, whatever, right?
Right.
And a lot of times you do find those people that every communication is, you know, about them and about what their needs are, right? And we all, you know, look to be introduced to new folks, but if there's, it goes back to that law of reciprocity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can think of a few people that come on the short list, and it's just like they're constantly making introductions and making things happen. And some people call it kind of building that bank account, right? That referral bank account or that equity in that relationship, relational equity, right? But that's what a lot of people do is they make all those, it's always making the withdrawal. They're kind of overdrawn, yeah. Right?
Yes.
And so if you don't make those deposits and you're not making them necessarily write that check or process that payment today, right? But you need those funds in your relationship equity bank account. Yes or yes?
Rich, let me yes, yes, and yes. Let me say this to you as well. You mentioned in the bank.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at the term center of influence network, and we'll call it coin.
Oh, there you go.
So let's look at the value of your coins.
Okay.
What's the value? You've got the Sacagawea dollar, right? And then you've got a penny. You've got to say to yourself, the people that you have within your coin collection, what's the individual value and what's the aggregate value? Would I rather have four Sacagaweas in my pocket or four pennies? Mm-hmm. What's the value? Mm-hmm. In other words, if you've got the person that's always talking positively about you and influencing people, he or she is a Sacagawea dollar gold coin.
Right.
If you've got someone that you know and they're constantly taking from you, then they may be valued at a penny. It's up to you on how you want to evaluate that coin collection, but I look at it the same way. What's the value of the individual coin, the person, and or the aggregate value of your collection? And that's why I actually use the term coin in my article.
And evaluating your currency, your personal currency, right? Mm-hmm. Because, this goes back to the beginning of time, right? It's like what you sow, you shall reap, right? So as you, I have a personal kind of philosophy approach to life is that a lot of people say, well, you know, talk about competitors in your space or whatever, and they get all kind of, you know, very protective about their business center of influence or their business space or their business sandbox, if you will, right? But my approach to life is I prefer to live in a space of abundance rather than scarcity. Because a lot of people live from a fear of loss, right? And they say, and actually talking about sales, I mean, most people will respond. It's, you know, you can't fight some of these things, right? So in a lot of business transactions, people will typically respond more from a fear of loss than they will an opportunity of gain, right? So, there's just kind of those universal laws that come into play. But you are talking about a lot of these networking events. And, it's not just a business card exchange. Right. But those, it takes time to build that relationship and also make those deposits. But also you got to think about, again, your personal currency. You know, how do people perceive you as somebody that's always contributing? And kind of another point, the thing that comes to mind is this approach. I don't know what book it was from, but they talk about this of give without the expectation of return. I mean, it's so powerful. It can really impact and kind of give you those goosebump kind of moments when you can reach out to someone that nowhere in the world could they possibly return that favor right to you, right? But that's just, you know, karma at its best, right? But it's weird how that happens. You'll do something and you'll just, who was it? I was reading something and they said, don't look down on someone unless you're willing to pick them up, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just, I don't know, I get off on a little...
Rich's thought of the day.
Yeah, thought of the day. Had a few, but it's inspiring because a lot of people just go to these routine events, one event after another with no kind of game plan or sense of what's my, you know, strategy or what's the potential outcome and how can I help out those folks there. Yes or yes?
Right, yes.
Yes.
Well, if that's my favorite. Yeah.
If someone's looking to build their network or just getting started, what are some avenues that you can recommend to folks? Or how do they get started?
I would simply ask your other colleagues. I'd ask your friends and associates and say, hey, what do you know about this person? Don't go into it blind, and be careful that you're not wasting too much time, because you want to in sales or any business development. We've got some people in here that we got soap, we've got bakery goods. Yes. I mean, your time is critical. And the same thing here. When you begin to identify who your centers of influence are, you don't want somebody that simply wants to get some drinks and meet over and over and over again.
Right.
It's going to waste your time. So one of the ways that I would do it is I would find out who people gravitate toward and find out why that's the case, mm-hmm. and then see what their skill sets are. And then finally, when you do find that individual, ask them a lot of questions. Ask her what her value proposition is. Mm-hmm. Ask him why they do what they do. And if they don't align with you and that sixth sense doesn't come across right, you may want to rethink that conversation.
Yeah.
That's right. It's okay to say no.
That's right. Yeah.
Very good.
And we probably don't have time for this, but it kind of spurs another conversation about building these alliance or partnerships, right? Because it's one thing just to kind of trade business amongst ourselves, or maybe you connect with some other folks, but there's certain spaces that people operate in, and you're in touch with a lot of these same folks. And we do a show here, Atlanta Legal Experts, and we see a lot of networking happen because they only practice in one area, but they get inquiries from, can you do this, and that, right? So beyond just those one-to-one transactions. Well, we're almost out of time, I think, right?
Yeah, we've still got about 5 minutes left here. So offer Mr. Smith here an opportunity to share with our listeners how they can get in touch with you or learn more about Center of Influence Networking.
You can reach me direct at my office line at 770-508-3002, or you can simply go to snellingswalters.com, mm-hmm. and there you can also find a connection to my link.
All right, and you're on LinkedIn at Brian Smith 4, number 4, insurance. So that's right, so you can find
just
it there.
Just trying to knock those other three guys off,
right?
Whatever.
And
yeah.
You can read your blog about these things and connect with you there. Listeners can reach out to you if they want to really get into this deeper with you, right?
Certainly.
Excellent, cool. Very good. Well, thank you for sharing all that information, and I look forward to good things from you in the future.
Very good.
All right,
so maybe we'll just finish up. If there's any follow-up conversations or a point you didn't get a chance to share, or some challenges. Actually, real quick, why don't we just go around and remind our listeners the best way to get in touch, and maybe what's on the next horizon, what's the next widget in your business future? So, Onyx?
We can be found at amentisgee.com, mm-hmm. and look for us next at the Business and Beauty Legacy Tour, April 22nd in Atlanta.
Okay. Where in Atlanta?
Good question.
Okay.
Check out. I bet you can Google it and find out.
Check Google for that. Well, thank you for sharing.
Nicole?
All right. I can be reached at mickeysdelightfultreats.com. Also 404-992-0587. You can actually catch us different parts of the city. We'll be in Mableton for Mableton Day. Down in Noonan, we'll be in Fayetteville for all the markets that coming up. It's that time of the year.
Nice.
Yeah,
and also
festivals.
Wedding season. So
you'll be busy, right?
It's a good time of the year.
Nice. Awesome. So, Kim?
Okay. We can be found at elavon.com. Again, that's ELAVON.com. And there's contact us links on our website as well.
So you're not doing any fairs or festivals coming up yet?
No, basically industry type trade shows are the ones we go to. Generally the larger national types like National Retail Federation, which actually took place past January, or some of the large hospitality shows. So that's primarily where we can be found.
And you mentioned that change coming up in October of this year that's going to affect business owners everywhere.
Yes.
So people may want to reach out to you now to kind of get fast forward on their transition to this new processing. And you can help anyone from a small business to a large company, right?
Yes, we sure can.
Excellent.
And kind of a dumb question. What areas geographically did you all cover personally? Is this for this region? I know you can, you're all over the world in essence, right? But
yeah, so we have sales personnel all throughout the U.S.
Okay.
Based in various regions. So whether it's a small business customer, medium business, large business, we have sales, small business salespeople. We have the ones that handle major accounts.
Okay.
So all throughout the U.S., we're in Canada, Puerto Rico, Europe, Mexico, Brazil. I mean, mm-hmm. pretty much all over.
And do you get to travel all those places?
Unfortunately, no.
And, we know that you guys are a global company, and there's other companies out there providing this service for folks. But what separates you guys from them? What makes Elevon different?
So I think that...
Good question, Ryan. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there's a number of things. But I think that for us, we have a focus on small businesses. And we're one of the only companies that, or possibly even the only one, that actually has account management for all of our customers Wow. after the fact. So if you're a small business, generally what happens is you sign up with your salesperson, you never see them again, you call a help desk when you have a problem and somebody, you know, on the other pond of the other mm-hmm. side of the pond somewhere answers the phone call.
Right.
We actually have dedicated account management.
That's great.
So the salesperson actually will hand off the customer right. to a dedicated rep that you can call, and they'll also reach out to our customers too and say, hey, there's this EMV liability shift coming up. We want to make sure you're prepared. Here's how we can help you. So it's really all about helping our customers.
So when that company sets up an account, they have that go-to person, so they know the kind of the account history and kind of the nuances of their business potentially, so I can call back in and each time, in essence, kind of talk to Barbara or Bob, whoever's assigned. Obviously, they may be out that day, but you get the mm-hmm. second in command. But,
right.
but there is a person kind of allocated just for those accounts.
Yes, there is a dedicated person that can help build a relationship rather than just calling into a
I think that's huge number. When it comes to a small business, and they want somebody they know they can pick up the phone at any given time, talk to them directly, who they may have talked to months before, but continue to support them as their business grows. So having that account manager makes a whole lot of sense.
It does, and that's something that's definitely been missing in this industry.
And one last follow-up question. We talked about geography. So for yourself, is this the Atlanta or the Southeast region, or what is it split up like that territory-wise, or...?
So we have, depending on the level of account, oh, whether right, it's yeah. a small or right. a national account, yeah, we have various geographies. And we also have a telesales center, too. So okay. if a customer calls in through the link on the website, we have telesales representatives that can assist. And if somebody needs to go out in person and visit, we have that as well.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, that's good right. to have that continued support. Once again, that makes a huge difference in knowing who they want to go with when it comes to you know, helping them with their payment solution. So excellent.
All right, well, I concur. This was a great show. What do you think?
I think it's great. We got small business owners. We've got large corporations being representative. We got individuals here.
Insurance
really
centers yeah, of insurance.
Yeah, that's right. All good stuff. And so I'm going to be leaving here and going directly to network on my lunch break across the street over here at Lenox Mall. So.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, great show, y'all. Thanks for being a part of it and helping us get the word out about what's going on in the business community. And we'll see you next time for Business Radio X.